Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Hi, I'm Kelly Corrigan. You probably never heard of me. Maybe you did. I wrote some New York Times bestsellers. I gave a TED Talk. But the reason I'm in your ear now is to invite you to listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders. We talk to everyone from Bono to Amy Schumer, Spike Lee to Rainn Wilson, Krista Tippett and Bryan Stevenson about purpose, creativity, well-being, and what makes life worth living. Follow and listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03, January 20th, 2025. Good afternoon, and thanks so much for joining us for the Monday edition of the WBBM Noon Business Hour. I'm Rachel Pearson, filling in for Rob Hart. January can bring a breaking point for marriages. We'll dive into that in our next segment. But right now, the holiday shortened week on Wall Street, plus a new presidential administration. We've got a slew of key earnings reports, a lot going on ahead. So joining us now on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Tom Hudson, a financial journalist in Miami. Tom, thanks for joining us on what it's just a historic day. We've got Martin Luther King Jr. Day. We have now the 47th president sworn in. And I think we have to start there with, what does this new Trump administration mean for the markets?
There are certainly high expectations when it comes to shareholders for returns, thanks to what may be the Trump economy. The stock market, as President Trump takes the oath of office today, is near all-time highs. Valuations are stretched further than they've been in a good number of years. So expectations are pretty ambitious that profits are going to continue to grow for publicly traded corporate America. They're going to be challenged, perhaps, about how far and wide the immigration crackdown is going to be in the United States, and certainly the impact around international tariffs and how that may impact consumer prices and consumer spending.
We heard the president and the now president touch on those tariffs and in sort of bringing down inflation being a top priority for him. I'm curious to hear you weigh in, because I think he sort of alluded to some advances in technology. And I'm curious if we're going to see a real heavy focus there. I mean, he mentioned us putting the stars and stripes on Mars, a big right. grin there from Elon Musk when that comment was made. But as far as the market reacts to this, you know, is this going to be a future that's still very heavily tech focused?
Yes, I think it will be. I think when it comes to tariffs, you know, what the president laid out in his inaugural address with very, very broad strokes here, Rachel, was really exporting revenue, collecting it in the United States from foreign sources, perhaps trying to reduce the tax burden that Americans face in order to pay for government services. Now, that is incredibly ambitious. And, you know, we'll see how the new Congress and others greet that effort through legislation in the weeks, months, and even years ahead. It would be a sea change, certainly, for a government revenue on not only how it and where it collects those dollars, but then, of course, the other question gets back to this tech portion of the question with Elon Musk, is how the government is spending those monies. Technology has enormous profit margins. It's been enormous wealth creator for a good number of Americans. And clearly, reducing regulations is overall a goal of this new Trump administration, certainly as it relates to technology.
Tom, let's shift gears a little bit, because we're also heading into an earnings season. So can you preview some of these quarterly reports that we should keep a close eye on?
Yeah, I think a number of them here in the days ahead, just a couple of them. United Airlines, for instance, tomorrow, the Chicago-based airline, how it sees travel in the next Trump administration, how it's even budgeting for fuel prices is going to be key. I think it's on Wednesday, Union Pacific and CSX Railroad. Now, nothing could be more 19th century in the 21st century, Rachel, than an old school railroad company. But railroad is at this intersection of international trade, tariffs, and consumer behavior. And so what Union Pacific and CSX are seeing and planning for here in 2025 is going to be key. And then, of course, Abbott Labs, again, another Chicago-based pharmaceutical drug manufacturer, how it is planning for the Trump administration and really looking at its research and development piece is a key piece for investors to see about future profitability, future profits.
Thanks so much for joining us. Tom Hudson, financial journalist in Miami, Florida. Coming up, we'll talk about how January has become known as Divorce Month.
Money conversation that pays a big dividend. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Well, January is a month for a resolution, but it's also a big month for divorces as people wait until after the holidays to call it quits and start fresh. Joining us to talk about the challenges that presents is Becky Cahan, a partner and family law attorney Berger Schatz in Chicago. Becky, what is it about January that seems to be correlated with divorce?
Well, January is a time when we see many filings or inquiries from people who are considering filing for divorce after the holiday season. The reason being is that the holidays are stressful for anyone, let alone couples who are already not getting along. And many couples will stay together through the holidays, especially if children are involved, just to keep a sense of normalcy throughout the season. And then once holidays are over, many will seek advice on filing for divorce.
Is this something anecdotally you've seen in your profession where we're, you know, it's a clean slate, the holidays have come and gone, and now is the time to seek legal counsel and finalize those things?
Absolutely. That's when we see an uptick most likely in January, when the family celebrations and the financial burden of buying presents and traveling can exacerbate the stress are over. And that's when we see most inquiries happen, is right after that.
Let's talk about what happens when you receive those inquiries. Is this a process? Again, I'm married happily, I might add. But I have to think that there's sort of this idea of divorce, and then there's realizing what all has to go into it and sort of all these little nuances that have to be decided. That's where someone like you comes in to help people navigate it. Talk about some of the challenges that come along with it.
Of course. So my colleagues and I at Berger Schatz, we don't want to see marriages fall apart. We work with our clients to make sure they've done everything in their power to make the relationship work. Sometimes that's individual counseling or family therapy. And if you haven't done everything and you're ready to file for divorce, we typically advise people to consult with multiple attorneys before hiring one, so that you can be sure that you find someone who understands your unique situation and is aligned with your goals.
Would you say that the majority of these types of things are amicable, in that both parties are coming to the table wanting, you know, both parties to walk away at least with some sort of resolution?
I think that the trend is that parties walk into this wanting to be amicable and do everything in their power to reach an amicable resolution. I do.
Okay, but there's also people that maybe celebrate a divorce, right? Throw parties for a divorce, trash your wedding dress after getting divorced. I've even seen divorce registries. I mean, this has become, I'm not going to equate it to a bridal party or a bridal shower, but there is some sense of, I mean, I guess, depending on the situation. What's your response to that? Because, yes, it can be amicable. You want everything sort of settled. But for some people, it's something to celebrate.
Well, divorce has really become destigmatized over the years. And while it used to be more taboo, divorce is now more commonly accepted. So many people use these parties as a fresh start. And trends like these parties give people a chance to celebrate the new beginning, whether it's amicable or not. And it can also offer those around them a chance to support them in an easy and fun way.
Yeah, it's not, you know what, I like that you're pointing out sort of the destigmatization that's coming along with this, whether it's something that you're putting on yourself and sort of feeling that judgment or not being able to have those conversations with friends and family. A party is sort of a way to lighten that up and still have support from others. Thank you so much, Becky Cahan. She's a partner and family law attorney at Berger Schatz here in Chicago. Up next, you know it, TikTok is back, at least for now.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
TikTok has once again restored its service to its U.S. users after about a 12-hour hiatus over the weekend. Joining us with the details, Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media and former tech editor for the Today Show. Paul, let's talk about this because I know some TikTok fanatics were spinning for maybe 12 hours, but are glad to see its return. First of all, let's talk about, we saw that January 19th deadline that the Supreme Court upheld. Congress passed saying that the parent company needed to sell its U.S. or its Chinese operations for the U.S. product. Now we have assurances from now President Trump, and that seems to be why the app was restored.
Well, yeah, the assurances. First of all, let's talk about fans of TikTok. I'm going to start with my teenage kids, who were probably more upset than I was. But there are a lot of people upset because the TikTok economy, to coin a phrase, according to the Washington Post, contributed about $24 billion to U.S. gross domestic product last year. So it's a big deal, financially and otherwise, and socially, as far as my teenagers are concerned. But all that said, the law that got passed and that was upheld by the Supreme Court and was passed by Congress, it wasn't unanimous, but it was bipartisan for sure, was that ByteDance, which owns TikTok, had to divest itself from its U.S. operations. It had to sell them or own only 20% or less of them. That was the rule. Trump gave assurances, but those assurances have nothing to do with the law. The law has taken effect. What Trump did was call a 90-day hiatus, basically, to say, hey, listen, I want to extend the amount of time that this thing's in operation as it is currently so we can figure all this out. That said, the jury literally is out on this one.
Well, and President Trump also sort of alluded to what he would hope is a joint venture between ByteDance and some U.S. buyer.
That's right. But according to the law, and again, if the law changes, you know, all this is moot, right? But according to the law, that joint venture can only include up to 20%, in this case, Chinese ownership, ByteDance ownership of the U.S. operation. Anything above that is illegal, according to this law. So that is the challenge. And by the way, that extension, there's a lot of people who said that extension that was, quote, granted by Trump has actually, you know, has no actual weight to it, no heft legally. So it is very, for sure, it is tenuous. And are there 90 days? Absolutely. You know, the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, said, oh, when I saw this tweet, so to speak, actually, I don't know what you call them on Truth Social, this truth announcement from Trump that, hey, we're gonna uphold this law, the ban. Johnson interpreted that to say, well, the law is going to say that we're going to transfer ownership. So that, you know, nobody's really sure what's happening, but TikTok and its multi-billion-dollar impact on the U.S. economy is very much still in play.
And I think it's worth sort of having a brief moment to step back from the app itself, right? And its content creation and its boost to the economy and how people literally make their living on this app. That's not what lawmakers are looking at when they're making these decisions. This is sort of a larger, they cited national security issues. Can you sort of elaborate on that and sort of the big picture that's behind this sort of looming, we don't know what's going to happen?
That's exactly, you pointed out exactly the challenge here. The challenge here was not, what TikTok claimed was, hey, you're infringing on our free speech. And people want to say what they want to say on our platform, you can't impinge upon that constitutionally. Well, the Supreme Court said, actually, it's irrelevant. The free speech part is not the part. As you just mentioned a second ago, it's about national security. And as far as the bipartisan, group of Congress people, decided after looking at some intelligence and other things that the Chinese government, which has a huge say in what happens at ByteDance in China, and again, by extension, therefore, in the United States through TikTok, the Chinese government is spying on Americans, spying on their behavior, stealing some of their information and so forth. This was the assertion. Whether or not it's proven, the law got passed in response to that concern. So the law was passed and they said, hey, listen, we think there is a national security issue here. The Supreme Court agreed, and there it is. So now this 90-day extension, we'll see. But the issue in play here is not free speech. It is not the multi-billion dollar impact on GDP. In fact, it's about national security, or so they say.
Thanks so much, Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media. Still ahead, helping keep your favorite restaurant in business.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rachel Pearson in for Rob Hart, and these are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Donald Trump has taken oath as the 47th president of the United States. A special report from CBS News is just ahead. Bitterly cold temperatures prompt an advisory from the National Weather Service. Plus, the sudden closing of a favorite restaurant, it can be jarring to diners, but sometimes you can help keep it from happening. WBBM Sports, Notre Dame takes on Ohio State for the College Football Championship. We'll have live coverage beginning at 5:30 tonight on 780 AM. The news continues nonstop on 105.9 FM. WBBM Business. Markets are closed today in observance of the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. And now it's 12:31.
CBS News special report. Donald Trump has taken the oath of office, becoming the nation's 47th president.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
So help me God.
So help me God.
In his inauguration speech, he declared the country's decline will end as we usher in what he called the golden age of America.
A tide of change is sweeping the country. Sunlight is pouring over the entire world. And America has the chance to seize this opportunity like never before.
On day one, the president is already moving ahead with his crackdown on immigration.
All illegal entry will immediately be halted, and we will begin the process of returning millions and millions of criminal aliens back to the places from which they came.
Trump is declaring a national emergency at the southern border and has shut down the app migrants have been using to seek asylum in the U.S. CBS News Special Report. I'm Michael Wallace.
Here in Chicagoland, we're under a cold weather advisory until noon tomorrow. Only one of the city's official warming centers is available today. It's due to the observance of Martin Luther King Jr. Day. The Garfield Community Service Center, that's at 10 South Kedzie, is open until 8 o'clock tonight. People can also find shelter at the 22 Chicago Police District locations. Also, some Park District facilities, they may be open, but you'll want to check online. All six of the city's warming centers will be operating tomorrow from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Well, the markets are closed in observance of the MLK holiday, but joining us now on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Andrew Bush. He's a former chief markets intelligence officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission and economic futurist at andrewbush.com in Charlotte, North Carolina. Andrew, obviously not a lot to look at today with the markets being closed, but there's certainly action nonetheless in reaction to the historic moment today of Donald Trump being sworn in as the 47th president of the United States.
Yeah, I mean, we saw immediate reaction in the oil markets. Obviously, this is one of the key areas for President Trump coming in. He's got about 50 to maybe 100 executive orders he's going to sign today. And a lot of the focus is going to be on energy. And so that's what I think is what we're seeing in the reaction of the markets that are open today.
Yeah, I mean, he used the phrase drill, baby, drill, and mentioned that there was liquid gold underneath U.S. soil, tapping into that to not only prop up the energy sector, but then using that to advance technology.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we're going to see from this president is the heavy use of the executive orders. Now, some of these will be able to go through, like he can eliminate many of the executive orders from President Biden, for sure. He can also exit the Paris Agreement, but he can also start to roll back and revise some of the EPA methane rules, power plant rules. They can restrict wind development. One of the things that he's going to do is for sure lift the pause on LNG exports and permits. So there's some positive things that are happening there on that front. Obviously, he's going to do something on immigration. We'll have to wait to see what comes out today on that as well. So it's exciting times, and it's like, hold on to your hat, because this is policy whiplash.
Well, and there's also been a lot of hesitancy, uncertainty surrounding these proposed tariffs that now President Trump had campaigned on. And even in his inauguration address, he alluded to those tariffs, but it doesn't seem like that's going to be installed day one. So is this good news for Wall Street, or is this, again, adding to the uncertainty of how those tariffs will affect U.S. markets?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he's walked back some of the language that he used during the campaign, which will probably disappoint some people. We've seen leaked out that he's going to do 2 to 5% kind of gradual maybe the frog in the boiling water scenario on that. But I think we'll have to wait and see. But it is surprising that he didn't act day one on raising tariffs. And so overall, that's good to some extent for inflation, because, you know, whatever we do, other trade partners will probably do the same right back to us.
Well, you touched on inflation, and so excuse me, so did President Trump. But I want to talk about how there's one. It's one thing to say it, that you're going to lower inflation and bring the economy back. It's another for that to happen. What role does the Fed play in making those promises a reality?
Well, first of all the hard work on inflation has been done. I mean, you know, we're not going to get back to the price levels we saw prior to 2020 for sure, but we're already back down to 2 to 2.5% inflation levels. You know, the Federal Reserve has got to maintain interest rates about where they're at because we're not seeing much more progress from 2.5% down on CPI. And actually, it might bump up a little bit depending on what tariffs get put in place. So the Fed's going to stay on hold for a bit here. And I think that's where the markets are getting a little dicey and getting volatile at these levels because they're just not sure what that policy is going to look like going forward.
All right, Andrew, finally, because you mentioned the word volatility, we have to talk about crypto. What is going on up and down? It's something to behold.
It's extraordinary. And I think Melania Trump just came out with, you know, her own cryptocurrency. I mean, it's the Wild West. It really is when it comes to this. I'm not sure where this thing's going to go. People love to play around with this. You know, will the U.S. have a cryptocurrency like stashed fund? I'm not sure why we would do that, why we would need it. But I mean, these are the things that President Trump has talked about as he's appealed to donors from that community. So we'll see what happens. There's a lot of enthusiasm. But my guess is from here, it's going to be a little bit of a tough slog.
Thanks so much for joining us, Andrew Bush, former Chief Markets Intelligence Officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. Up next, why you shouldn't neglect those favorite restaurants.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Restaurants, even long-standing ones, can close unexpectedly. So don't take them for granted or put off visiting the ones you've always wanted to try. You never know when they might be gone forever. Let's talk about it with Izzy Karish, president of Hospitality Works here in Chicago. And Izzy, I can't imagine I'm alone in this, but I drive past restaurants all the time and I think, oh, I'd love to try that sometime. And then the next thing I know, it's gone. It's shut down. Even if it had been there for decades.
Oh, that is, you know, we all assume that that restaurant's going to be there forever. And then, you know, 20 years go by and the next thing you know, they're closed. And you think, oh, my God, I had 20 years to get there and I never went. But it should be top of mind because, you know, great restaurants are closing as the economy changes.
Here's the other thing is how much of a difference would it make for these restaurants? Would they not have to shutter their doors if those people like me who drove by actually pulled over and sat and ate?
Well, that certainly would have been helpful. And I think that's a thought.
I'm not taking full responsibility for the closure of every restaurant in the Chicagoland area. I'm just saying that maybe I played a part unknowingly.
Well, right. And that happens. And again, it's just because they're such great restaurants. I mean, one that we all know was Lowry's. It was an incredible restaurant, unbelievable presentation, reputation, and then they closed. And a lot of people that I talked to said, oh, my God, I never went there, and I always wanted to go, and I heard great things.
And an example for me, I live out in the western suburbs, and I used to always drive past Max Golden Pheasant. It's a Czech restaurant, and it closed at the end of the year. And it's one of those things where how often are you going to find that kind of cuisine? You know, maybe it's just me, but it feels like there are far more family-owned and operated restaurants closing than there are family-owned restaurants opening.
Well, that you know, I think it's just that the new restaurants don't get all of the marketing or the fanfare that, and it won't happen for them for a couple of years. So you have to wait and see. But those older restaurants, they are. You know, they are closing, and you brought up a great point where that restaurant closed at the end of the year. And restaurant closings tend, especially on these older, well-known and well-established restaurants, typically happen towards the end of the year. They look at December and they say, well, it's time for us to close our doors. So if you've been thinking about going to a classic Chicago restaurant, do it before December because you never know.
Well, and you know what? It's not too late now either, because we're coming up on Chicago Restaurant Week. That's sort of wrapping. It starts at the end of this month, continuing into February. What a great way to explore those restaurants you've been meaning to see.
Absolutely. And to go to ones you've never been to, and they can quickly become your new favorites.
Izzy, thanks so much for joining us, president of Hospitality Works. He's also known as the restaurant coach here in Chicago. A reminder, you can join us at this time tomorrow for Travel Tuesday. Still to come, it's our Monday stock picker. We'll get a couple of ideas from an investing pro.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Stock Picker Monday, and helping us out today is Bill Uliveri, owner of Sunical Capital Management in Glenview. Bill, glad to have you with us. What's your first pick?
It is going to be ExxonMobil. It's sideways for the most part for the last two and a half, three years, but it's a foundation. It's a real pillar of the energy sector, and it pays some pretty good dividends. So I think as America begins to grind up and expand and work on infrastructure, I think ExxonMobil might be one of those names that I think is going to be good for someone looking for not an extremely risk value proposition.
And your second pick?
My second pick is, again, this is a contrarian play. This is Walgreens Boots Alliance. Now, Walgreens was kicked out of the Dow in August of 2020. And it just looks to me, if you're looking at a chart, it is down huge since its high, from about 4 or 5 years ago. And again, I think that, we're entering this period where we have to be very, very careful about growth stocks. And by that, I mean, this current administration has invited the technologists into the administration. And it's really interesting to me that the growth as an asset class is at the same high level as it was compared to value in March of the year 2000. That was the peak internet, bubble right before it burst. So we have to look for value plays, in my opinion, be a contrarian here. And I think Walgreens is one of these stocks that's a huge contrarian play in the retail space. And it pays a 7.8% dividend stream. I mean, I know it sounds crazy, but I think we have to look in places where no one is looking at right now for our investment themes for 2025.
And Bill, for our listeners, can you sort of explain what makes Walgreens a contrarian play here and sort of why its value is where it is?
Well, Walgreens merged with Boots Alliance a number of years ago. There was a clash of the culture, U.S. versus overseas. They expanded too big. I think their expenses were too high. They were not capturing the type of foot traffic that they were expecting. They were competing with CVS. And actually, most people I've talked to don't really have a very good experience or even have a need to go to Walgreens except to get a prescription filled. And frankly, that's just not enough foot traffic and sales to keep things going. And so it seems to me as though they have a new CEO. They've cut their dividend, but they didn't eliminate it altogether. And again, Walgreens stock was trading at $65 a share just a few years ago, and it traded $10 a share, even less than that at the bottom in 2024. So it's chugging away. It's now in a bullish trend line. It pays a good dividend. And I think that Walgreens is one of going to be these names that it's right in front of your face. You drive past one every few miles when you're in your car. And I think it's going to be a great performer in 2025.
Bill, you drew a parallel to growth stocks today compared to growth stocks of 2000 with the boom of the internet. I'm curious if you can expect, let's talk about what happened with value in that same time. And is that something that you're expecting to see here today?
We have to manage investments, and we also have to put our little risk management hat on. And so, for example, if you look at peak internet right before the bubble burst in March of 2000, and then went 5 years later to March 2005, the NASDAQ QQQ was down 67%. Value, the Vanguard Growth Fund, symbol VUG, was down 50%. The S&P was down 13%. But the Vanguard Value Fund, the ETF symbol VTV, was up 32%. So I'm not going to say that we're going to see those kind of extremes over the next 2 or 3 years. I'm just saying that never before, except in 2000, have we seen growth do so well compared to value. And I just think that, we have an interesting time period here in our economy. And I just think that the value is in value stocks. I mean, we just have to play this control. And I'm not saying you sell everything that's growth. I'm just saying, goodness, you know, Apple, Google, Amazon, Netflix, NVIDIA, Bitcoin, like all these growth high-tech things have done amazing in the last few years. And I think we have to take a few chips off the table and look to the things that are, pay attention to the children that don't get the kind of attention they deserve.
Thanks so much, Bill Ulivary, owner of Seneca Capital Management in Glenview. If you missed any part of today's show, you can go to our stream and just skip back to the time you want. There's even a pause and rewind function that works both online and with the Odyssey app.